ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Australia's always been the lucky country. Sunshine, beaches, and that one magpie that always seems to know where you live.
Yeah, get away from my chip, please. Luck might not cut it anymore.
So can we make our own luck and turn this complicated world to our advantage?
That's our global roaming summer season. Can Australia surf the world's chaos without wiping out?
Fresh new episodes all summer. Search for Global Roaming on the ABC Listen app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, Damien Carrick with you on ABC Radio National Summer. This is the Law Report, leading the national conversation of legal stories and cases. Come with me as I tour a drug testing facility at a dance music event. And a warning, we will be discussing details of drug use and drug overdoses. When it comes to pill testing for recreational drug users, there's a lot happening around Australia. But before we head to Melbourne, in April, Queensland closed down that state's two fixed-site pill testing facilities. The state LNP government says there's no safe way to take drugs.
We agree with that in that the drugs are so unsafe that they need to be tested so that we can determine the ingredients and explain the risks of substance use to the people who might be choosing to take them.
That's Cameron Francis, the CEO of The Loop Australia, a not-for-profit organisation of chemists, health workers and researchers, which develops and conducts drug testing in Victoria and previously in Queensland.
The goal of a drug checking service is to understand the contents of a substance and help explain the risks of that substance to a person and some strategies that they might be able to use to stay safer.
Acknowledging that taking drugs is not safe, but the risks can be minimised as opposed to making it safe.
That's definitely right. You know, once people have accurate information about what the substance contains, but also once they've got a little bit of education around how the risks of the substance might work for them, and that includes understanding things like medications a person might be using or other underlying health conditions, then people are able to make better choices. Even as simple as understanding what the signs of overdose might look like and what the steps are to go and get help in an emergency.
While Queensland closed down its experiment with drug testing, Victoria followed in the steps of the ACT and opened a permanent, standalone pill testing facility. In preparation, the Victorian government allowed a series of pop-up pill testing services to operate at music festivals and events. I attended a dance music event in Port Melbourne where I met The Loop's drug testing director, Sarah Hiley, and chemist Riley Heron, who had just completed a drug test.
So the results indicated this is an MDA sample, which is pretty common, similar to MDMA.
Ecstasy.
Yeah, similar to ecstasy.
And MDA is a drug that we often find that where people think they've brought MDMA, and actually they find out when they've come to see us that they have MDA. Now, MDA is different. It's not as euphoric. It's a little bit more hallucinogenic and lasts for longer and has a slower onset. So the risks there are someone thinks they've got drugs and they take more. Someone's not expecting it to go as long as it does. Or someone was wanting the euphoria and they get more of the hallucinogenic and so they take more. So these are all risks. So if we can tell someone, your MDMA is actually MDA and this is what you're likely to experience, then they're going to make different decisions based on that information.
So it's all about everybody understanding what they're taking?
Correct, yes. We want to make sure that people are well informed so then they can make the right decisions about their drug choices for that day.
And how many staff are here today involved in the pill testing service?
We have a staff team of 13 today. If we were at a big event, a big three-day event, we'd be taking up to 30 staff.
And I can see that there are people talking to people who are bringing in their samples, and there are other people manning machines.
Correct. So we have two different groups of people. We have our chemists and we also have our harm reduction team. Our harm reduction team is made up of healthcare workers and peer workers, and they're the people that do the engagement with the patrons coming through. The chemistry is really the carrot. People come here because they want to understand what's in their drugs. However, what that gives us as a golden opportunity is people have come to get their drugs tested, but we get a perfect opportunity then to engage in harm reduction discussions. And we start there from when someone comes in the door and is waiting in the queue right through to after their results have been given to them.
Okay, so when somebody comes in with a pill that they want tested, you take a small part of it, about 10% of it, I believe?
We take 10 milligrams, which is about the size of a matchstick head, no more.
Okay, well, let's chat again with Riley.
So the simple way to look at it is like each chemical has a fingerprint, and this is scanning the fingerprint.
And now we're looking at a screen, which is on a laptop connected to this fancy spectrometer.
So what we've seen here is different components separated out. And what I'm seeing here at first glance seems to be both MDA and MDMA present, which isn't uncommon, which is a good thing because I know the user said they had a bad experience, and so we identified the thing that would have caused that for them.
So the user has said that they had a previous bad experience with this drug, so they're anxious to make sure that they're not by accident taking it again.
Yeah, so they actually gave us their sample to dispose of as well. They didn't want it anymore. They brought it in so they knew what happened. And they're not going to take it again. They said they didn't like it, and it was an unwanted experience.
So that's one of the really great things that we can do at the Drug Checking Service, is if something is found that people identify is not the experience they want, they can dispose of that with us, and they leave it with our chemist, and we dispose of it with the rest of our samples. Typically, the other way around that this would happen, if someone has not consumed it, they've come in, they've found out these results, sometimes they will then elect to say, actually, I don't want this, even though I haven't tried it, because it's not what I want to be taking. I don't want to experience those effects. So we're reducing that harm, basically, for that individual.
And I'm imagining that a lot of people would, if they find out there's something in the pill that they weren't expecting, they might take less of it. They'll still take it, but they might take less of it.
Well, actually, including when people have found that the drug that was as intended, we've found that often people say, I'm actually going to take less of this because of the harm reduction conversations we've had with people around heat, around hydration, around serotonin syndrome. Depending on the drug, serotonin syndrome is specific to MDMA. But often what we find is they'll get the results, but even if the drug is as expected, after they've had a conversation with the harm reduction team, they'll make a decision that was different to what they'd initially intended to do. And it's often that I'll take less, or I'm going to take it over a longer period of time, I'm going to space it out more, or I'm going to wait and take it another time. So these are decisions that are going to assist them in having a better health outcome, essentially.
And do sometimes people choose to discard the drug completely when they're told what's in it?
Correct. So we can dispose of it ourselves. We do. That's one of the questions we ask people. What do you intend to do now you've heard this information? Sometimes people, the drug is at home, so they say, I might dispose of this at home. But essentially, you can dispose of it here with us safely.
Okay, so can you tell me how often you find, in terms of the people who come in for testing, how often is it what it says it is?
So in our last three public reports, you can actually see the data, which is really great. So about 70% of all samples that have been dropped off thus far in the events we've done have been as expected. But a whopping 30% have not been. So that might be your expected drug was there, but another unexpected psychoactive substance was there. Or your drug that you thought it was is not there at all, and another psychoactive substance is there instead, or no psychoactive substance is there. So that's about 30% of all cases, of all samples dropped off.
And what sorts of substances have you found that you might not have expected to have found?
So the most common ones we find are, for MDMA, is MDA, which Riley was just talking to you about. We also found at one of the festivals recently 4-CMC in MDMA samples, and we actually put out a general alert about that to the festival.
What is that?
It's another drug structure that's not MDMA. It's got longer lasting experience, not euphoric. It's got some nasty side effects, and so people were having bad experiences on there. The other challenge is, because it's a slower onset, people don't always think it's working. And then they can take more 4-CMC or a different, or take more MDMA, and the mixing of the 4CMC and the MDMA together isn't good. So we were able to put out that alert, and, well, as a notification at the last festival, just to inform festival goers.
How do you send out alerts? Do you send out text messages to everybody who's bought a ticket?
It depends on the festival or the event that you're at, and it depends on what structures they have in place. So a recent music festival that was a large multi-day, they had electronic notice boards in the campgrounds, they had helper huts, we were able to put up posters, and so we used all those communication channels. If it was urgent, we'd actually do something a bit more serious, and we, depending on the size of the event, they'll have access to SMSing patrons, putting something up on big screens, but we would only do that for the really, really serious. We're not here to scaremonger or worry, we're here to give credible information so people can make informed choices and let them know where they can go to get more information.
And what are the serious circumstances in which you have put out an alert?
So far in this festival season, we have not needed to put out an urgent alert, but you would see from your research, both in Canberra and Queensland, that their fixed site services, for example, when they find a nitazine in a drug, that's an urgent alert, and that will go out on their socials, that will go out through networks, that will go out to healthcare providers and drug and alcohol services and peer services.
And what's nitazine?
Nitazine is a deadly, very strong opiate. So everyone's heard of fentanyl. Nitazine's the new kid on the block. It's the new fentanyl. So it's stronger than fentanyl. And someone who is opiate naive will suffer a serious overdose and potentially have a fatal outcome. And even people who have some opiate sensitivities or tolerance will probably be at risk of an overdose. So nitazines are one of the most serious concerns we have at the moment in the market. And the drug market is so unpredictable these days, particularly with people buying off the dark net, that we want to make sure that we can give this correct information.
This is the Law Report. Today, attending a pop-up pill testing facility in Melbourne. Right now, everyone is on high alert for nitazines. The Victorian Coroner's Death Prevention Unit has found that in Victoria, nitazines have caused 23 overdose deaths in the last 4 years. The Loop's CEO, Cameron Francis.
Nitazines are a whole family of synthetic opioids. They were invented in around the 1950s, but they were never used in medicine because they're too potent. They're just too strong. So they've never been used sort of legitimately in pharmaceutical kinds of settings. Over probably the last 5 or so years, nitazines have been starting to turn up in the global drug market. Initially in places like North America, often found contaminating heroin or designed to mimic the effects of opioids like heroin. But in the last, I'd say, 3 or so years, the nitazine type opioids have really spread all around the world. And they've also turned up in really unexpected places, including in drugs like cocaine or MDMA or ketamine or counterfeit benzodiazepines as well. So they've really infiltrated the unregulated drug market and started to contaminate the drug supply all over the world.
Now, Checkpoint, the Queensland standalone pill testing facility, which has just closed down, in addition to advising people who came to have their drugs tested, what data or information did Checkpoint provide when it comes to this emerging class of drugs, the nitazines?
One of the advantages of a drug checking service is that we are often the first ones to detect some of these compounds that are circulating in the market. So our first nitazine detection at Checkpoint in Brisbane was towards the end of November 2024. We had a person present with a counterfeit oxycodone tablet, which tested positive on a nitazine. So after that detection in November, then the beginning of January, a person presented to the service with the same tablet. They'd seen the alert that we put out in November for the first detection and had recognised the tablet that they had looked the same. So they'd bought that tablet in.
In your alert, you'd pointed out that there was a yellow pill, a branded oxycodone tablet. In fact, it was a counterfeit and it contained the nitazine. And people out there saw that and then brought in the same substance to the pill testing facility a month later.
Yeah, that's right. So we take high quality images of the samples that we detect, and then we distribute those as broadly as we can so people can identify similar looking batches. With things like press tablets, that's quite easy. It's much more difficult with things like powders. But yeah, in this case, the person had recognized the tablet that they had looked similar to a previous alert that we'd put out, and they brought it in for that reason, that they were concerned that it looked the same. And I mean, since that time, there's been actually a number of other notifications of the same tablet. So across Australia and actually across the world. So that particular batch of tablets, there's probably a really large batch out there that's circulating all over the place.
Then just in April, there were more health alerts issued by Checkpoint and I think Queensland Health, and they related to a green teddy bear shaped pill.
Yeah, so in our last 2 weeks of service, the last two Fridays, we had two separate nitazene detections back to back. One of them was a yellow barrel sized tablet that was purchased as oxycodone. But the second one on our very last day of service was a very large size teddy bear shaped tablet. It looked a lot like MDMA tablets look like these days. So it was not designed to look like a pharmaceutical medication. If anything, it looked a bit like a lolly. It was a cute teddy bear like shape, very large size. And that was on our last day of service.
So Cameron, it sounds like drug testing facilities play two roles. One, they provide advice to individuals who bring their substances in for testing. But perhaps drug testing also plays a wider role in working out what is out there in the community. Is that a correct way of thinking about it?
Yeah, that's right. So drug checking services are often the first ones to detect some of these compounds that are entering the community. There's always the next sort of lot of surveillance we might get could be from overdose data where people have presented to hospital. And, you know, we'd prefer not to wait for that to happen. We also do see some police seizure data as well, although there's often time lags in police data being released to the public or in a public health setting because it's often obtained in the context of an investigation, which is often underway. Drug checking services can pick up these substances really quickly, but we can also get information off the people who bring them in, which gives us a bit of context around where that sample might have come from. Like, have they purchased this from an overseas darknet retailer, or have they purchased that locally here in Australia? And that extra information that we're able to get from service users helps us understand where these trends might be emerging and where to target those alerts so that the people who need it get to hear it.
In recent years, coroners, when handing down inquest findings involving drug overdoses, have spoken about pill testing. What did Victorian coroner David Ryan say last month, and whose deaths was he investigating or looking at?
So the most recent coroner's report looked at deaths of four people in Broadmeadows. And I want to first acknowledge the family and friends of the people who've lost, because we are losing a lot of people to overdose in Australia. It's a real tragedy. The case in Broadmeadows involved, what the coroner found was that people believed that they were purchasing cocaine, and then they've snorted that cocaine and then overdosed, most likely really quickly. Nitazenes are really potent, which wouldn't give a huge amount of time for someone to contact ambulance or reverse that. So it's likely that the people involved were unaware that there could be the risk of nitazene contamination in a drug like cocaine, and then that's led to their unfortunate passing. So there's a number of lessons from that, in that really we have seen nitazene detections across Australia in all different types of drugs. There's been multiple alerts from many Australian states over a few years now. These types of clusters are not unexpected, and what we're concerned about is seeing more of these types of clusters, and that actually the Broadmeadows case is really representative of a risk that is out there across the whole country.
And the coroner referred to the Victorian Coroner's Prevention Unit, which tracks nitazene, and said that overdose deaths where nitazene were involved, there had been, I think, 23 in the last few years. So there are quite a few.
Definitely. And
what did the coroner have to say, David Ryan, about issuing alerts, and in particular, well, both in Victoria but also in Queensland? He referred to what you had been doing in Queensland.
That's right. The coroner noted the value of alerts around things like nitazenes and noted our detection and alerts that we'd been issuing here in Queensland. The value of those kinds of alerts is really that even if the person themselves don't bring their sample in for testing, I mean, the opening hours are always limited. Drug checking services are unlikely to be available in every single community anytime soon. But just having people know that this is a potential risk for them. If someone's using cocaine, they often wouldn't think about having something like naloxone on hand, which is an opioid overdose reversal medication. And being able to alert the community to things like nitazenes in cocaine helps the community understand what those risks are and what they could do to try and keep themselves safe. And even really simple things like, you know, we always say don't use substances alone, so that there's someone with you who can get help if they need to. But similarly, if in a group of friends are using cocaine and they haven't been able to test it, then only one person uses a little bit first, so that there's someone available to commence CPR and apply naloxone and phone the ambulance in the event of an overdose. So nitazene alerts can be a really good platform to educate people who use drugs around what the risks might be and how they can try and keep themselves safer.
And what did Coroner David Ryan say specifically about drug testing?
The coroner was really keen for drug checking to get expanded across the community and to make it more available right across the country, because these sorts of drug trends are not localised to one state or one jurisdiction. It is an international drug market. The whole country is sort of facing these kinds of issues. So the picture we can get on the drug market is best from as many sorts of inputs as we can. And so the more drug checking that's available across the country, the better and faster visibility we'll have across these trends.
Now, this coroner is not the first to talk about pill testing inquest findings. Victorian coroner John Kane did so back in 2023. Victorian coroner Peressa Spanos did in 2021. She did an inquest into the deaths of five men. And also in 2019, there was a New South Wales coroner who investigated the deaths of six people at music festivals. They've all talked about pill testing, haven't they?
That's right. It's been, you know, the subject of a lot of discussion in Australia for a long time now, probably longer than it needed to be. Drug checking is pretty common in most developed countries around the world. And so, you know, as we've seen increasing drug-related harms over time, the coroners are really responding to that and looking at, well, you know, what are the options that are available? And drug checking is one that has now got a really clear evidence base behind it that shows that it can be helpful. Also, some of the criticisms of what the unintended consequences that people think drug checking might cause hasn't come to pass in the jurisdictions that have been delivering it.
What are those unintended consequences, as you describe them, of pill testing?
Some of the critics have said that drug checking could lead to sort of increasing people's drive or desire to use substances, so that there would be an increase in drug use in jurisdictions where drug checking is available. And that's just not happened anywhere that drug checking is available. If anything, we know that when people access drug checking services, a decent proportion of them dispose of the drugs and choose not to take anything. So we actually see the reverse in practice. We see lower levels of drug use in people who access our services. About our first music festival that we delivered drug checking at in Victoria, across the New Year's Eve period, 40% of the participants that came through the service indicated that they'll be using a lower amount of drugs after having a conversation with one of our staff. And that's because we've explained the risks of overdose and the risks of heat in a music festival environment to people, and they listen to us and they make changes to their behaviour based on that. So that's probably the major one.
Cameron Francis, CEO of The Loop Australia, the organisation which runs pill testing facilities in Victoria and until very recently in Queensland. Thank you. Thank you for speaking to the Law Report.
Thanks, Damien.
Back at the rave in Melbourne, I had a few more questions for drug checking director Sarah Hiley.
I'm curious, how does this service interact with law enforcement? Are there, for instance, sniffer dogs here today?
Well, first of all, in Victoria, we're incredibly lucky. I'm so thankful that we are running this drug service in Victoria, because they've actually changed the law. So we can legally operate, and so patrons can come in without fear of prosecution. Part of that process was law enforcement being involved in the legislation and the regulations, and they're part of the monitoring of the service higher up. What that means is that they are supportive of the service as a healthcare response to drug use. and are supporting it as such.
So how does that, I mean, are there sniffer dogs, for instance, anywhere on the venue or searches of people?
I don't know. Each festival and event has different area commands and different approaches. My understanding is here they have a security force, as they normally would, but this is an event, and typically you wouldn't have police at an event of this size.
Yeah, because how many people are at this particular event?
I think this event, specific event, can hold up to about 2,500, but there's between 1,500 and 2,000 tickets sold.
It's interesting because I know that in the past there's been conversations about, okay, so people coming to consume drugs is one thing, but people coming to sell drugs is another. So you want to have some kind of searches and sniffer dogs to prevent the trafficking, the selling, as opposed to the consumption the people are coming to consume.
Police have a part of a harm minimization strategy, and their role is to reduce supply. Our job is to reduce harm for the end user. And so we're both working at different spaces within a harm minimization strategy, and we're all doing our job. Police will always do the role they need to do, and we will do the role we need to do, but we can work in the same space together.
And you feel like you've got a good relationship with Victoria Police at least?
Yes, very much so.
Sarah, anything else I haven't asked you that you think is important that people know?
Ooh, Ellie. Well, I'd just say I think we're going to have to be setting a fixed site up later on this year.
When will that happen?
So that's going to be in the next few months. Yeah, we're just working through the process for that. What I'm really excited about with that is that gives equity of access for anyone who uses drugs and not just people who are coming to a festival or an event.
And events tend to happen in the summer months, so you'll have some kind of more ongoing monitoring, as well as providing the information to people as they ask for it. You'll also have a better ongoing monitoring of what's out there and what is being sold to people.
Correct. So we really thank the Victorian government actually for making this really sensible decision to do both festivals and events and fixed site. It's an implementation trial, so we're working out what works best. We might find there's a mix of models that work, or that one thing really shines out as being the most effective way of doing this work.
And Victoria will be following in the footsteps of the ACT, which I understand has had a fixed site facility in central Canberra, I think, for the last 2-3 years. And the Queenslanders did have that, but the recent new Conservative government has decided to close that service.
Yes, they have. And so that's our organisation that was running the Queensland service, and we are really hoping that we'll be able to get that up and running again.
How long was it up and running, the fixed site facility in Queensland?
It was up and running for a year, and we also did a couple of festivals up there as well.
Any other parts of the country contemplating this kind of facility, this kind of service and this kind of facility? I know that it was trialled in Wollongong in New South Wales recently for the first time.
Correct. My understanding is New South Wales has been the next state after us to trial out drug checking, and we do hope that continues too. I think it's only a matter of time. If people listen to evidence and listen to the information that's out there, they know that this is the best strategy to reduce harm around drug use. It's a no-brainer.
Thank you. Thank you for showing me around. Very interesting.
That's the Law Report for this week. Do follow the program on the ABC Listen app. That way you'll get the latest podcast as soon as it becomes available. To follow, all you need to do is click on the heart button. And if this story has raised any issues for you, we have a list of support services at the Law Report website. A big thank you to producer Christina Kukolia and also to audio producer today, Riley Mellis. I'm Damien Carrick. Talk to you next time with more Law.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. You can discover more ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.